This is the podcast only edition of Dig Deep. We're continuing the conversation on environment. I'm Heidi Holton with Aaron Brown, Chuck Marone. As we sit here today, Thursday, February 15th of 2018, Representative Nolan has dropped out of the race, and officially in the race continue to be Leah Pfeiffer for the DFL nomination, and Joe Radinovich just confirmed it today,
yep.
And also the mayor of North Branch.
Kirsten Kennedy.
That's right. But by the time people hear this, I'm guessing they will probably be more in the race.
I expect at least two more Democrats and maybe more.
I'm riding around, and all of a sudden I look at my phone, and it's just, bam, Nolan's out. And I thought, what? I have to say, I mean, I know Rick Nolan personally. I think he's a very nice man. I don't know him in a personal way where I get political insights from him. I mean, we're not that close. I'm not surprised by him dropping out. I'm not surprised by him saying, like, I've done my time. I want to do something else with my life. You know, he has a daughter who's been dealing with cancer, who's, you know, obviously very close to. There's a lot of things, I think, in his time between his terms that he served in the early 80s and then, you know, the recent one, he had a very full life. Active in the community, doing a lot of stuff. It doesn't surprise me, but then it did surprise me because mm-hmm. I didn't see it coming. And
he was acting like a candidate right up until the time he announced. And I guess he had been thinking about this sometime. I'm actually due to have an interview with him. I was supposed to have it this morning, and I could have unleashed untold insight on this as to his decision making. But, you know, it was, I think, multiple things. You look back and say, no, it's not surprising. You know, he's 74, has family health problems. You know, he's been away from home. He likes where he lives. And then the climate was difficult, not just the Republican versus Democrat climate, which has always been difficult since he got reelected back into Congress. But even within his own party, there's just a lot of challenges. Now, I made that comment publicly here last week, and I've gotten a lot of pushback on it from other Democrats saying, well, he's not scared of a primary challenge. He's not scared of anything. And you know what? I don't think that he's walking around shivering over Leah Pfeiffer or anybody else. He's not afraid of the Republicans, you know, even though he knows it's a competitive race. I don't think it's that. I think it's that you have to have an emotional strength to do that. And I think he was just facing a lot of stuff and reached a point where he said, you know what, other people are, younger people can do this, let them do it. And so now, of course, because 8th District openings have been rare over the last 40 years, you know, everybody wants to run. And we're going to see a number of Democratic candidates, and I think for the first time in a long time, a truly competitive Republican primary, too, especially if Pete Stauber is the announced Republican candidate, and the state party and the national party seem to be enamored with him. He's a St. Louis County Commissioner, a Duluth police captain. But Stuart Mills, the two-time nominee in the recent elections, is looking at this race. He invested a lot of his own money into those two races that he lost, and now is looking at an open seat. And he's got to be saying, I beat my head against the wall twice. I deserve a shot at an open seat.
What does a lot of money mean?
Millions of his own dollars, yeah. From the Mills family business empire. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you the amount, okay. That he put into his own campaigns, but certainly he's put some in.
We're not talking, play money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
us.
Right. Right. It's I don't know. He could probably afford it, whatever he put in. But
right.
And he raised, of course, a lot of money, too. But even I've heard Kurt Dowd, who lives just barely in the 8th District, the Speaker of the House, Republican Speaker of the House, is looking to run for something. He's looking at governor, and there's some talk that he might be looking at the 8th district too. So if either Mills or Dowd gets into you have a really Donnybrook of a Republican primary as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating district. I have to believe that the fact that this was a highly contested district as well plays in to the decision of Rick Nolan. You know, this was going to be a district where a lot of outside money came in. There's a part of me that says, and I don't know if this is going to be true or not, but the Democrats right now at the national level are feeling very confident that they're going to take the House. I think they're counting on this seat as being one of those that they would retain in that effort, and then a bunch of other ones that would be easier to pick off. I know they feel like there's momentum on their side. I don't know if the idea that this would be a huge battleground, which I think it will be even more now, a big battleground state, it certainly is a state that if a district that if you are a Republican, you've got to feel confident in. This seat has been trending. I mean, the momentum in this district is in the right, you know, in the red direction, and has been for a while now. The idea of having a strong incumbent who I think is pretty well aligned with the district as a whole, it had to give the Democrats some peace of mind that they now don't have. Can some of the Democrat candidates, can some of the DFL candidates fill that void? It feels like to go through the primary process, you're going to have to today go further left than I think the district would be comfortable with. Where on the Republican side, you're not, you know, what are we comfortable with on the right? I don't know. Mills was not exactly a centrist. I don't think you're going to have to go further right than Stuart Mills to get the Republican endorsement. That leaves you with kind of a situation where I think you could end up with the more moderate candidate being the right side of the political spectrum, which is an odd place in this district. I you have more insight on that than me, but, you know, it seems like we are here trending in the way basically every district in the country has trended, which is further to the extremes, you know, which is a diversion from the candidates we've traditionally had.
Right. It used to be you'd try to nominate a suitable moderate that would attract a general election victory, you know, so he's maybe not the most liberal or the most conservative, depending on your party, but that's a person that you...
Jim Oberstar was not a flaming liberal.
Right, right.
Chip Kravach was not like a right wing.
And he was crossing over on a number of issues. Jim Oberstar was, you know, a solid A from the NRA, pro-life, you know, so there were things about him that did not fit the Democratic mold, and he carried these huge margins year after year after year.
Right.
And right now, you don't see many candidates. Rick Nolan was... frankly, might be the last one.
That's what I was thinking too. He did have a lot of those crossover things, and he, Rick Nolan's name was floated for governor in this election, and pretty much, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I pretty much rejected by the urban Democrats, saying like he's not acceptable because of this and this and this issue where he's not aligned with us.
And what Chuck was talking about earlier, the dynamic in the district. There's a few things. One, it's a big district, and it's a complicated regional dynamic. So you have a big city, Duluth. You have a regional center in Brainerd. You have the edges of Bemidji. You have the Iron Range. And then you have this ex-urban area down by Chisago and Ashanti counties, all of which are different. The people from those areas don't necessarily mingle day to day. Some do, but many don't. And so they don't know each other. You know, a candidate, you know, Kirsten Kennedy from North Branch, I don't know much about her. I will, but I don't know about her right now. Joe Radinovich from Crosby, is somebody, does somebody in Grand Marais know who Joe Radinovich is? Maybe not, unless they're following politics very closely. So we are cross-pollinating ourselves regionally, which is a challenge. We're also finding that there's one of the reasons the Democrats have struggled, especially with messaging, is the difference between the parties on their coalitions. You know, every party is really a coalition of different people. There's some Republicans who are Republicans because they have libertarian economic beliefs. Some are socially conservative on a religious, as a fundament of their religion. Some are, you know, just want to be left alone. They're from the woods. And then variations therein. Democrats have, you know, hardcore left-wing hippie types and labor, hard-hat labor types and educated professors, and everybody's, there's different parts of the coalition. Well, the Republican coalition gets to do this. A candidate, any one of them, Mills, Stauber, or Doubt, gets to come out and say, I support responsible mining. And here, let's talk about apple pie and mom. And there's no, they can go to party events and they'll clap and there's no more discussion. They don't have to talk about it anymore. A Democrat.
They're not going to get hit hard and dragged through the mud on that issue.
A Democrat has to say, if a Democrat says the same thing, and many Democrats do believe that statement I just said, they then have to win over people who believe that no responsible mining in copper nickel can take place. Some people who do, but think the process is messed up and that the company should pay more. And they have five or six different positions on mining that they have to try to negotiate.
Which have no Venn diagram overlap, are all mutually exclusive.
They're almost all exclusive.
And disqualify you if you don't meet it from, you know, that person's vote.
If you go all in on mining the way, say, a Representative Jason Metza or to some extent Joe Radinovich, if you go and say, we're going to do this mining responsibly, take Rick Nolan's position, which is where Rick Nolan is, then there are voters who will not vote for them in the primary and might not in the general, too. And this is the other thing, is that there's the Democrats, I should say the liberals, have a release valve in Skip Sandman, who's running in the general election with the IP. He's an environmental candidate. And so if he gets 5 to 7 to 10% of the vote in the general election because somebody with Rick Nolan's position got elected and the environmentalists just can't handle voting for a Democrat who believes that, then we're watching as whoever the Republican is gets a huge advantage, probably wins. And that's the struggle. The Democrats are divided on this one issue. It's just one issue. They agree on all sorts of other issues. 99% of the issues. They agree they have problems with President Trump. They agree they have problems with the tax bill. They think it's hurting working people. They're watching unions degradate in the environment we're in, and they're upset about it. They all agree. But this one issue could be the thing that delivers what might be a DFL majority normally. I think it is. I think sans that issue, I think the Democrats win this seat. Because of that issue, you can only view it as a toss-up with a lot of different outcomes possible.
What's the electable take on copper nickel mining?
The electable take. Well, I think Rick Nolan had it for three elections. Rick Nolan had figured it out. Rick Nolan took one step too far, and that's what caused this current situation.
Let me say, too, I think Rick Nolan, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm thinking about my history, Rick Nolan got the nomination when the Republican had a seat. And that does change the calculus of the primary, because now you're saying, well, we got evil there. We got a counter evil with something, and it might not be perfect. So let's get something in. And it makes you more willing to compromise. But when it's wide open, you're standing on principle.
Yeah, but here's an important detail. In 2012, when Rick Nolan gets elected, there were three candidates in the DFL primary. Of the three, Nolan was perceived as the least pro-mining out of the three. Terrell Clark had the steelworkers endorsement, and Jeff Anderson was the homeboy from the Iron Range, and all the range people who supported mining backed him up. Nolan said the same thing he's been saying, which is that I support mining if it goes through the right process, and which was the best that the liberals could get in that primary. And therefore, Nolan won the endorsement and he won the nomination. And in governing with that position, he's watched the process go forward. And like I said, it frustrated some environmentalists that felt like, oh, he was our guy, but maybe he's not our guy. He didn't change. The thing that he did that really caused the movement that allowed a Leah Pfeiffer to emerge with a lot of delegates after precinct caucuses, and Leah Pfeiffer, by the way, has almost the same position as Rick Nolan. It's only slightly different. And that's what's really funny about her being embraced by the environmental community is that I in talking to her, she's not anti-mining. She's got a lot of questions about copper nickel mining, and it's a nuance. It's not a strict anti-mining position. It's more of a nuanced position, which is the one Rick Nolan had. What Rick Nolan did, though, is he had press conferences with Republicans and supported very, very strongly worded deregulation bills. And the image of him standing next to some of the guys who were tearing apart the national park systems and stuff in Congress was too much for some environmentalists. And they said, basically, we're shopping for a candidate. If we can't get that candidate through the DFL primary, then we're going to skip Sandman in the general. How much this is, you hear different things. You hear, oh, there's a small group of people who believe this. And some people say, oh, it's 10%. It's going to be enormous. I don't know. I think it's there certainly are people who are very strong on that issue, who have that very strong belief, who will be there. But I think another thing to consider is that a year ago, heck, 2012 feels like 1,000 years ago, doesn't it? The way we have no memory.
Politically, it does.
Politically, we have no memory. This conversation will be old the moment someone hears it. Mm-hmm. And so where will this country be? What will be happening in this country in November of 2018? Could be very different. So, but nevertheless, the Democrats have a real challenge on this issue in messaging, and every one of them isn't there. First, they think about how they look in their campaign photo and how shiny they look, and then they think about what are they going to tell people when they ask about mining, because that's what's coming.
Let me just add one tiny bit of icing to this cake. In the couple of weeks before we recorded this, we've seen the stock market go through wild gyrations that haven't happened for a long time. I just looked now.
I was just looking at your phone.
We're up a tiny bit. We've seen inflation numbers start to creep up. We've seen employment at very low levels, unemployment at very low levels. We've seen government debt, the interest rate that the government is paying on its debt start to creep up to levels that are starting to not necessarily alarm people yet, but like precede alarm, whatever that would be. I think, and we've both said this before, that this coming election is going to be an economy election. You see, and I'm going to say this, and it sounds ridiculous, I know, but the actual approval rating of President Trump right now is in the same realm as Barack Obama at this point in his presidency. You're a year and change in. He's had a couple victories. The economy is looked at as being strong. There's a lot of people that are relating that to him. I think if that, I personally find the economy narrative to be a fantasy. But I think if that fantasy continues through November, this is a very different election than if those numbers that are not trending in the right direction start to go really bad. Is this going to be a fall like 2008, where you have banks melting down and, you know, economic bailouts? Or is this going to be, you know, an election like 2016, where the economy is looking pretty good and is not really the issue? And if anything, it's an affirmation that the path we're on has been pretty good. I think that's going to have more impact than anything. And it's a wild card right now.
Yeah, it really could go. I mean, we could have a 10,000 point drop in the stock market over the summer, and that would change the whole story.
It would change everything. And I think that is a possibility as well. And that would change everything. And so, you know, I think we're going to have to wait and see. But I'm fascinated to see who the DFL picked. I think the Republicans will go with the early entrant. And I don't know if still Stu Mills gets in or not. There's a little bit of my bias creeping in because I'm not going to vote for Stu Mills. You know, so maybe I want a different candidate. But, you know, I think the DFL is going to be fascinating primary.
You can't predict right now, can you?
No, we don't even know who all's in. Yeah, but you know, there could be five or six candidates if they all go to the general, which is possible if they don't compete for the endorsement. You could see the winner with 28%.
Yeah,
26%.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to the podcast only edition of Dig Deep. We want to hear from you. We want your comments. You just send us an email. You could also do it on Twitter, but you can send us an email to comments@kaxe.org. And we'd also love to know what topics you think that Aaron and Chuck should take up.
I like you email me some of the comments sometimes.
Yes. How do you feel about that?
And it's funny because I feel like, you know, a lot of our left of center listeners will say, you know, Chuck, I kind of like him sometimes. Sometimes he says some things that aren't bad, but I really hate him on this issue. I really get mad about this, or he's totally clueless on this. So yeah, you know, you can keep those coming. That's good.
I get emails, not just from Dig Deep, but from my columns and things, where people from the right will say, well, I can't, of course, I don't agree with you all the time. That's like the first thing they have to say.
Right. Don't start to think that I actually like
you. We don't require agreement, just discussion.
Absolutely not. I don't. I mean, one of the things that I enjoy about this is that it forces me to think through a lot of my assumptions on things, too, that until you have to sit here with an intelligent person, you know, on the other side, it makes you, you know, you can get kind of lazy about your own thoughts. And I enjoy coming here every month and going through this process because it forces me to think through things that I otherwise might not. So hopefully we do that for the listener too.
You guys are good models.
Thank you.
We're modeling our shirts.
Yeah, that's right. You'll have to check out the photo on the podcast. Yep. That'd be great. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.